that's right. I'm right here. Y'all just got to hear those two excellent interviews by Ashley Byrd, who is the chief of news for Learfield News. And, of course, we carry South Carolina radio news right here on WCRS. Those interviews she did earlier in the week. And I tell you what, Ashley, I think you did an excellent job trying to come up with some different questions. Boy, it's tough when they're all in the media all the time, isn't it?
It is very tough, and there were so many more that I wanted to do. There were so many more, and after a while, they had to wave me off so he could go do his rally. But I really wanted to spend more time. A few questions I wish I could have asked. But I was interested in his take with Nikki Haley, because it's interesting how he tends to ratchet up his talk about her every time he gets in talking about her. It's very interesting, talking sure. about Trump.
Right, you're talking about Trump there. Yeah, and, you know, I think the word, I should have counted how many times Mr. Trump used the word love.
Love Nikki Haley.
Love Nikki Haley and hate her at the same time. It's rather interesting how he does this, isn't it?
Well, because of this, he has to be very, very careful. She is too much of a sacred cow, not calling her that, but that's a different way. She's an aunt.
Sorry, too, I can't help it. Go ahead. Okay.
She is too popular, even among people outside of her own party, and because of things she's done recently that has put her in a good bipartisan light, he has to be very, very careful with that. I'm surprised he goes after her at all, to be frank.
Right. Well, you know, he does, and you brought out some of those issues. Now, you weren't on the telephone with him. You actually got to sit down with him and talk to him.
I did. We were alone in a big room downstairs in North Augusta, and after it was over, I mean, he was very, very polite, and, you know, we were almost whispering because we were alone in this big room, and there was no reason for me to, you know, speak loud to him, so it almost sounded like we were whispering to each other.
It did.
But he was very polite, and he did tell me after it was over, he liked the questions, too. That was a good interview. It was tough, but it was good. I said, well, thank you. I thought that there were a couple of times that you're going to always revert back to campaign speak. It is in their brain, you know.
Right.
They're always going to get back into the rhythm, and you have to be careful how you interrupt them, because, you know, they'll shut down if you interrupt them too much. So kind
what
of like with Bush, you know, he's going to say his campaign points because that's what he's agreed to do the interview for.
Well, what were you, what point, what of those questions that you were, you felt really good about that he gave you what you considered a truthful answer? Let's go with Trump first.
That's a good question, Ann. That just put me on the hot seat. You know, I think that he was honest about polls. I could tell that about unions.
Right.
I could tell that he was not going, and this is where I saw this. He would sidestep the question, and he did qualify the question by saying, you've got a good thing here in South Carolina with right to work. But he did go on to say, I think they're, you know, they work in some states. He says, I have support from the Teamsters, which I'm still trying to get confirmation about. And I don't know if you've ever to find out a Teamsters endorsement of him.
I don't
but,
think so, Ashley.
He did stay in the middle on unions, and that was, he could have sidestepped that, but he went ahead and I asked him again, and he said, no, I don't have a problem with them in some locations, which is not the GOP party line.
Well, that's true, and he was talking about the Northeast, and yes, the unions are very strong in the Northeast. One of the questions that I thought was real interesting that you asked was about industry in South Carolina, et cetera, and he was talking about how great it was that we got Boeing here in South Carolina. That was part of your union discussion there. He said, but you have to be very careful because Boeing is going to China, as the way he likes to say it. And I thought that was very interesting to say you've got to be careful how you structure the deal to keep them here.
Mm-hmm.
I thought
the one thing that, right, he's right, and it sounds like he wants to negotiate the deal with Boeing. But he is warning that, and he said, if you're a smart person, this will work out for you.
Correct.
And I could have followed up and say, do you think the state's being smart enough in this situation? But the other word I was asking about him, another compelling answer I thought, you know, you have made your money by being a risk taker.
Correct.
And yet you're working with the federal government. You're working with the GDP of a country. How do you change that? Do you change it at all? And he said, I will work with a different formula. And that's a more, that's not a, you know, shoot them up, tell them what to do kind of attitude. He's actually, sounds like he's refining his economic plan. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, well, I thought actually in most of the interview, I mean, there were some talking points, but in truth, he was actually quite thoughtful in the questions. And every once in a while, in some of the interviews that you see on TV and et cetera, you see that kind of thoughtful side coming out instead of this shoot 'em up type attitude. Now, one of the things, though, that I thought also was interesting when he was talking about the unfairness of the tickets to the Peace Center debate, I had heard a breakdown as how the tickets were given out, and one of the ways that one of the groupings that I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, was that 600 tickets were actually given to the candidates, and with six candidates, that meant each one would get 100 tickets.
Right, right. And we reported that, the South Carolina Radio Network reported that, because the party gave that kind of breakdown. And if he indeed got those, what it looked like, if he took advantage of those, he didn't bring out, he didn't bring out a very vocal group.
Right.
And he was saying he didn't bring out any donors because he doesn't have any. So whether his group was quiet or they didn't fill the tickets. Now, that being said, how they share the tickets, how they, you know, barter for space and things
right.
like that, in those numbers, I saw plenty of room for, you know, some vocal non-Trump people to be in that mix, absolutely.
Sure. Well, I would have, you know, and he kept saying in the debate that he only has his wife and children there. You know, he didn't mm-hmm. say, well, you know, there's a few out there in the audience for me, you know, and he could have waved them up and said, come on now, make some noise.
But he doesn't want to be in this position that Jeb Bush was and say, please clap.
Right, right.
He didn't want to do that. But, yeah, absolutely, there is definitely a party, establishment party, faithful dislike of him. And I can't imagine some of the GOP leaders that I've met that are actually movers and shakers in the state whooping it up the way that we heard
right.
that night. That was what was a little odd to me. Was that to you? You were there.
Yes, I was. I was sitting right behind you. Yes, I was. Yeah.
I can't see Glenn McCall or some of those other folks who were in the National Committee,
right.
and some of those who were more state, and you would never catch them, you know, acting like they were at a wrestling match. So who were those people? That was interesting.
Well, you know, it was actually, and I think you had a video of it, and I went out and did one, too. On the outside, it was, Kasich and Rubio were the loudest groupies outside the debate. There wasn't hardly anybody for Trump, and just a little yay for Jeb Bush.
Right, it was Cruz actually. Cruz and Rubio's groups were very loud up
yeah.
and down the streets there, and those were, you know, it's sort of kind of a, what do we call it, the clash of the clans
yeah.
over there.
It was pretty unbelievable that there wasn't more of the other groups there.
Right, and it's all about the strategic. Now, no matter what happens on the floor of the debate and no matter what happens outside the debate, what Trump does is command the stage. He's very used to speaking to the people at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was observed by our news director up in Iowa, that he always has that avenue, and he seems to bank on it. So it really doesn't matter, you know, if what he's saying can get through to the people at home. And he's very used to that because he's a producer. He's a television producer.
Sure.
And I'm not being, you know, I'm not being metaphorical here. When he goes into a building and plans, or his people plan an event, they've taken into account all the different optics and how it works and how it's going to feel. And so if he was out of control of that audience, it must have frustrated him a great deal. We did ask him about that, and he said he wasn't angry, but you know darn well he was angry that night.
Yeah, I heard somebody, you know, the thing about it is when they went to commercial break, they we didn't see anything sitting there in the press room there, but I did hear somebody say that while they were on break after that first one, he went down and talked to his wife and children, and it was almost like somebody said, you know, I don't have this verification, but somebody said it was almost like they were saying, don't worry about it, just go back up on the stage and do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty interesting stuff. Now, where are you this week? Are you going to be around at different locations? What are you doing this week?
I am. Taking a moment to kind of catch my breath today, and then go back to Columbia tomorrow. And we're doing the CNN
town hall.
Town hall on they've split them up into two groups.
Right.
As you see.
They've got one tonight, right?
One tonight, and the other is Thursday. So we're going to be in the Columbia side of it. They've split them up, too, the way you split up kids in a classroom, too. As to how they're, might not go out. You might actually hear some things because they're not going after each other, per se.
Yeah, that sounds good. So you'll be down there in Columbia. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Jeb Bush with you, about that interview with Jeb, but I also want to talk about Governor Haley coming out and endorsing Rubio. Gosh, we now have Trey Gowdy, we have Senator Tim Scott, and now the governor here. Is Rubio going to win?
According to the polls, he's not slated to win.
Okay.
But he could come in. Let me back that up. I was in Iowa. The polls kind of were misleading in Iowa, and things got flipped a little bit. But when you're in double digit, you know, when you're as high up as Trump is right now, what they're looking for, I think, is to catch up and have a very strong second.
Right.
Because what they're vying for, what even Cruz now, but what Rubio and Kasich and Bush have been vying for is, let me be the establishment candidate to, you know, go after him closer to the convention. They're trying to fight to see who's going to really stand for the party while he sort of stands more independent. Even though he's not an independent, he's obviously not in lockstep with the party. So they're trying to get a strong person in there to battle with Trump. And what has happened is that South Carolina has rallied quickly around Rubio. Even some of the people that are, you know, huge fans of the Bush family, they're feeling more pragmatic. They're looking at those polls and they're seeing, you know, 7% for Jeb Bush or lower.
Right.
And with Rubio, with Rubio at 10% split with Cruz, what they're doing is battling for that second place. And it would be amazing if he did catch up with Trump. But, you know, Trump's crowds and his, you know, local support's pretty strong in South Carolina regardless. So they're trying to get a good, solid second. And you're absolutely right. This endorsement early by Haley is huge.
Right. I'm actually surprised that she would endorse at this point.
That's how much the party in South Carolina is concerned.
Wow.
And that, I mean, they're bringing out, and what I also saw, he's bringing out interesting people on the road with him today. Mario Lopez was there, some other high-profile folks. They've ramped up his appearances. in South Carolina, and it's a pretty grueling, grueling schedule. Now, he had a lot to make up in that debate.
Right.
And he caught up, or let me say, he didn't catch up. He caught up with himself. He regained a little bit, maybe a good bit of his momentum from before that horrible appearance in New Hampshire. So he's caught up with himself, and now he's trying to get back in the pace that he was before to be the establishment candidate. There is a lot of power in the upstate with Tim Scott and Trey Gowdy.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them are, it's hilarious, and they're a show together. When they show up together, it's almost like they're having so much fun, but they are all in, and they are, you know, really, really a part of the interchange. There was one thing I saw I think it was in Ely, where there was a question from a veteran, and Rubio said, you know, you should have gotten that benefit. And Tim Scott came forward and took the mic and said, I need to talk to you right now. We'll make sure that happens. So he actually showed some action right there on stage. I think it was a pretty strong moment. Even though Cruz didn't promise it, his guys were saying, we'll take care of things. And it was pretty strong. So a lot more people coming in. But this move by Haley shows how important the First in the South is.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a major power player right now, and this is them, you know, putting their best feet forward. She could have gone for Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Pragmatically, it's the polls and the numbers at his rallies and things aren't showing that he's got a surge going on.
Correct.
And they're also, you know, they're thinking ahead. They're thinking strategically. And, you know, this whole field is very interesting and experienced. So, you know, I think this is a big, big, big statement that she's made on behalf of her, but on behalf of the party as well.
Well, it's rather interesting because she is young, he is young. Are we trying? They definitely, as the Republican Party, has to be trying to bring that younger and the female vote and bringing it right into Rubio there.
That's a major part of it,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Rubio's one of Rubio's chief coordinators is a young, very active politico from South Carolina. His social media and his digital is all of his digital is done by him, and he's very tapped in to, you know, what pushes the young Republicans here. And I'm sure that there's a bigger Rubio machine here than people realize, I think. And
well, that's kind of surprising, isn't it, when you look at, you know, and all the statements that Bush is South Carolina and Bush is this and Bush is everything for South Carolina. It's kind of interesting that this is how they're kind of swooping underneath the radar to come out up ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No.
And it is. And look at who's with whom, too. You know, Lindsey Graham and Bush are colleagues, and they've known each other for a very long time. And he sort of represents that sort. And he is more of not war hawk, but he is a more military, pro-military, and that sort of thing. And there's a whole different set of issues too. And one of the things that's been attracting the younger vote for Marco Rubio is his education plan. And I don't have to go in or I'm not endorsing that, obviously, but just go in and look at what he's laid out on it. It's like a four-pronged plan on education that some young voters we talked to saw as realistic. You know, they never expect, and the GOP voters or the undecideds we talked to never expect to be going to college for free. But they saw some things in there that they thought were practical, and their parents think practical. So there are some things, plus the fact that he's young.
Right.
Obviously does go a long way. The question everyone's asking is, you know, has he promised Haley,
yeah.
you know,
VP?
A slot on the ticket?
Or Secretary of State or some such thing, right?
Secretary of State.
Yeah.
That's a big jump. Now, great, her diplomacy in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Her diplomacy after Emanuel Church and then some other things, you know, maybe so, but that's a pretty big leap.
I was just throwing out a big one there, Ashley, you know, just thinking ahead here, just trying to be ahead of this. I mean, you know, I can't believe that this just came out and here you and I are talking about it right here on the radio. That's pretty awesome, huh?
It is. It's been an amazing time to be in South Carolina. I've been visiting our other networks and helping out, and I was in Iowa, and that was a blast. That was a blast. But the more Iowa simmered and the more that New Hampshire stayed predictable, we knew that South Carolina was going to be a big deal.
Right.
And we knew it. And it really, really is. And not only on the Republican side, but on the Democratic side. I mean, you are really seeing you know, some splits, not huge splits, but important shifts in some of the black leadership.
Correct.
On the Democratic side. And you're seeing that play out, and the Democrats have another, week and a half to go.
That's right. Are you going to be staying down here for the Democratic part of it?
I am not.
Okay.
No.
I was wondering if you were going to get that interview with Hillary for us.
We still may get that. We may get that, but there are a lot of good reporters in the network. I didn't mean that like I didn't want to be here. I'm not sure that I can ignore my other networks for this long. And to be honest, our guys have such a command of covering South Carolina, and those are two candidates who are ubiquitous and able to cover. Part of my being here is there are still so many Republicans in the field.
Sure.
It's hard to physically cover them all.
That was very politically said. I am very impressed.
Well, it's actually the truth.
I know.
Matt and Bill and those work very, very hard, they needed to get some sleep. They needed to get some sleep, and it was getting ridiculous. And, of course, I love being here and love being in the state and from the state. So, and this is, like I said, it's one of the most telltale political years ever. So you and I are the same animal. We like being right in the fray.
That's right. Hey, you know, you're listening to WCRS. Ashley, if you've got a second, I want to ask you a couple more questions.
My pleasure.
Have you got a second?
I sure do.
Now, when you, because we really haven't talked about the Bush interview, what did you think of the Jeb Bush when you were interviewing him? What were you thinking as you were talking?
We had just come off not too long from the debate, and where he had actually, made a stand, and he was still pretty angry. But I really wanted to get a sense, and I think it was we asked him that question of, yes, your family's beloved here, but isn't there a fine line? And I think that came out in the interview between evoking the past, because he's always talking about Hillary Clinton evoking the past.
Right.
And actually, you know, putting things forward. I can sense a bit of a frustration that his message, especially his policy message, has not gotten out, and that he feels derailed.
Right.
You know, by Trump. And he's such a quiet guy. Excuse me, the antique clock is going off here. He's such a quiet guy that he has to, you know, really force those things out. And there's a lot of things left on the table is what it seems like. You know, I'm experienced, I'm this. But you can sense the frustration with him that I've got a lot to say and it's not getting out there. It's gotten kind of stifled.
Right.
He's got a strong, you know, he's so much, sometimes when you have so much experience, and you and I can probably identify with this. How do you portray that? How do you, you know, I did this. And what we're seeing with the voters, they want, I will do, I will do, I will do.
Correct.
And it's hard to sort of portray, but I can because I've been there, you know. Sometimes.
How do you sell yourself in that situation?
Right.
Yeah.
That was where he seems to not be comfortable with saying, you know, being as
boisterous.
I don't know. yeah, bombastic and
right.
and that sort of thing. Because, you know, look, Rubio doesn't have an awful lot. Rubio doesn't have the experience that Bush does.
Right.
So it's a battle of personalities at that point. And he kind of got derailed. He kind of got derailed. And so what we were talking about is, you know, he still spent some time defending his family. And one of the main questions that a lot of pundits have had, and they'll always listen to pundits, of course, is, should he take the time to defend his family? Should he take the time to do that and stand by it and all that stuff? You know, is he wasting time where he could be talking about policy?
Sure.
And that's, again, where he got derailed a little bit. So he kind of lost control of the message, which is very, very, very difficult when you have a limited amount of time. Is there something that struck you from the interview?
Well, I thought it was interesting on his education, what he was saying about education.
And you don't hear much about
that. No, you don't. And yet, when you listen to what he said about education, about a $50,000 voucher and then 1% over 25 years, you know, that's reasonable. That's
mm-hmm.
reasonable if it helps keep everything on par. And the other thing that he said in there that I thought that was not really that hasn't really been played out that much is, I believe he said in that it would be, it wouldn't just start with the new, it would actually refer back to loans that are already in place.
Right, which is a huge deal to
huge, people. Huge, and it's not getting any play out there. So I thought from that standpoint, you know, you that was a good point that was brought out. I also thought that his point about his granddaughter being multicultural,
quadruple hyphenated, I think is what he said.
Yes, hyphenated. I thought that was because, you know, you don't hear now, if you know, he says this at his town halls and this type of thing, but I've heard very little of this type of stuff that you were able to talk about, because I'm not able to go to the town halls. So, and they don't come to Greenwood, so we don't get to see them that much here.
And I think they should, because even this town hall, let's say there's 200-300 people.
Right.
I think there was 300 to 400 when I went to with him. That's a small cut of the people that you're trying to get to, right? So
sure.
The rest of your message is Trump's bad. You know, you can have the most talented, smart candidate in the world. This is going to sound trite, but it's all how you play the game.
Sure.
And you know, you get the most talented quarterback, right? But if the team has not got a focus and a plan to move forward under a certain banner, then you might lose track. And see, one of the things I appreciate about this, this is an intense election. More people are showing up.
The numbers
more
are
chatter.
Huge. Yep.
It's intense, and some of these folks haven't had that intense an election in a very long time. If you go back to the last GOP primary, it was kind of, it was kind of, there wasn't a lot of fireworks around it. So
right.
And a lot of people didn't get inspired or incensed to go out and vote.
Except
now,
when Newt Gingrich here in South Carolina.
Right.
Except for that, but it was.
You know what?
Yeah.
He was kind of a precursor of what was to come. And those people who say, is this a different South Carolina? Or, this is not a different South Carolina. South Carolina was already going that way.
Right.
And so he was kind of a precursor of what was happening, I think. But if you aren't, really, really controlling your message and focusing and beating up on those things you know that are going to work, it's, especially, again, if it's been taken, if you've been derailed a little bit and have to defend yourself or have to feel like you're defending your family or whatever. And, you know, his and I think he's one of the nicest people I've ever met, honestly. His banner says Jeb with an exclamation point.
Right.
You know, and so if
and
he's
Trump
the message.
Says, and Trump says, make America great.
Right. And so if he's got a lot of messaging to get out there to get some of those plans, and I do believe people are more hungry for good policy answers than they think we are.
Right.
You know, the questions I've seen, really good questions, and again, I'm going to toot South Carolina's horn, the participants, whether they were fans or undecided or whatever, the participants across the state that I have talked to have been very thoughtful, have been very serious about their decision, and were asking great questions.
Well, I think we've been. I think part of the problem is in all of the debates, while there has been some good information that has come out there, unfortunately, we're not getting that nuts and bolts that we need to be able to make. We're getting showboating and lots of back and forth and calling this one a liar and this type of thing. So we need that information.
And that's up to us.
Yes.
And that's up to the voter to go and find these websites and read the books and read the website policy papers and see who does not have any of those out. And what you see at these rallies, they'll say, listen, I've already spoken to this. It's on my website. Or I already spoke to this, and it's in my book. And so that's where they're having to put all this stuff. And then I urge the voters to go out there and take a serious look at the books and the backgrounds. And, you know, some people have changed the policy over years, and that's where it's hard. You know, when they say that they've evolved, you got to, you know, what can you base this new persona on? What do you know about it? So that's always interesting. But I think you're right. I think there's a frustration that they've got good stuff to say. Do we give them enough time? Do they take the time? And then you leave it up to the voters to go and dig it up and really, really stay. But I will say again, South Carolina's voters are engaged. I met a fellow who went at the urging of his daughter, who is a Bernie fan.
Okay.
And he had never been to a rally before, but he went to the Trump rally to see what it was all about. And she just thought if he's going to get interested in it, he needed to go and look and see for himself. And I thought that was good. I met a group of college students up in Malden, I think it was, that were going to all the rallies in the upstate. And some were Democrats and some were Republicans, and some didn't know. But they were going with each other to just go watch and see and come out a little bit more educated. And it was really, I didn't see that in 2012.
Well, you're right. I think, you know, the numbers are proving that out, whether it's Iowa, New Hampshire, and, you know, the numbers down here in South Carolina. I think people are upset, and they know that they need to try to make the right decision this time.
Yeah, I think everyone feels like that. Everyone feels like it's more critical. And because of how loud and bright this whole thing has been, they can't help but be a little bit interested. You know, they almost feel like, you know, rock stars in town, I need to go.
Exactly. I agree with
now,
you.
Now, your listeners, how's that been? Have you been, really discussing this for a while, I guess?
Yes, we have, and right now on the website we have a survey that they can go to, wcrs1450am.net. Right now it's very interesting as far as the numbers coming in. I don't think we have enough numbers to really give a good feeling on it, but right now it is Trump and Bernie Sanders are in number one place on our survey. How about that?
Reflecting the national poll.
Yeah, isn't that? It's very interesting. So we'll see how it comes out, because as it inches closer to the end of the week, I hope we'll get a better feel, and it'll be interesting to see what Governor Haley's endorsement of Rubio does for him, just in our little little poll that we have going on up there, because it's only if you go to it and you vote do you get counted. We're not doing a sampling or anything. We're just letting people go there and check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But
yeah, their timing was amazing. It's kind of a quiet day. I mean, they're all on the road, but there's been no real kerfuffle that had come out of it, other than Cruz and Trump really, like, one's threatening to sue, the other's threatening to sue back, and he'll, you know, they're going after each other because one says the other's a liar and all of that. And so things are kind of at a hum, and then they drop that bomb right there. So strategically for the party, that's pretty amazing, because it's going to dominate the news cycle for the next 24 hours. And then let's see what Trump says.
Absolutely. So... Well, the question will be, will he still love Nikki Haley? I mean, I don't know. It may, you know, you had that interview where he loved her. I mean, you know, I don't know what's going to happen now. What's he going to say now will be the question, right?
Well, you know, and love is a very relative term in that interview. It's like, so what could she do? I mean, what were her avenues to do the things you think? And he didn't tell me. He just said that if you're governor, you can get this stuff done. Well, as you well know, governors, especially in South Carolina,
they don't have a lot of power. They
don't.
Right.
And they're hamstrung by the legislature and also have, you know, a tug of war with the federal government. So it doesn't take, it takes a lot to get things done and to fight and all of that stuff. So he didn't give a specific answer, but I do believe that his rhetoric is going to get a little bit sharper towards her, but he's going to have to watch out. She's not Megyn Kelly.
Right.
And we thought that he was going to really suffer by Megyn Kelly.
Right.
The Megyn Kelly thing. But see, people are still distrust the media, unfortunately, for those of us in the media who work really hard.
I think Governor Haley
is a different animal.
Yeah, I think Governor Haley, though, in some circles, has hurt herself by some of the things she's done and her interest in being in Washington and everything. There's a segment of our society here that says, hey, we're, you know, she's just getting ready to move on to bigger and better things. So this won't seem like a surprise from that standpoint, but what will be very interesting is how she how Trump reacts to this and what comes out of it. That's just going to be one of those bombshells you're not going to believe.
And don't you hear everybody holding their breath?
Yes. I mean, I think the official announcement is, what, is it supposed to be tonight? I think this was just leaked out here or something, but, yep, it will be, she's supposed to be talking about it or something this evening, so we'll see.
So what will Rubio do in order to defend? And the reason I said I wasn't surprised, he's been bringing her up. Rubio has been bringing her up in a lot of his speeches.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, you kind of have to have a little bit of a leeway with that person if you keep bringing them up and agreeing with their policy and stuff like that. He's just been dropping little, you know, she's doing great here, and I want to do like Governor Haley, and he kept dropping her name more than I've heard the others do. So
well, you know, if you look back at this thing, I thought it was interesting that Trey Gowdy endorsed first, and then right before, where was it? Right when it was needed, Tim Scott jumps in there. So this is a planned endorsement attack, if you want to call it whatever, the way they put this together, because it was divided, and boom. So,
sure.
She has the whole thing. Well,
yeah, she didn't just scratch her head one day and say, "Oh, I think I'll go with him."
I think you're right there. Well, I tell you what. You know what? This has been a blast.
Me too. This is great.
So, I've got to go, and we're going to let you go. But maybe before, or maybe next week, maybe we could talk again.
Sure, we'll be covering it Saturday night, so in the night before and things. I mean, the day before. So, give us a holler, as we say. And Ann, you do a wonderful job there. I call you the intrepid Ann Eller, and I mean it. You're really, really doing your listeners a great service, and I'm so glad you're there.
Thanks so much, Ashley. Go get them, Tiger.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye bye.